We're going to be in Matthew chapter 5 today. Grab a Bible, go there. You no longer have an excuse not to bring a Bible because you can see it now. I can see you, so you no longer have an excuse to not get in trouble while I'm preaching. So bring a Bible. If you do not own a Bible, we will give you a Bible. We have Bibles out somewhere in that direction, wherever that is, in our next steps area. So stop and get one. Bring a Bible. I'd like you to see your Bibles. We'll always throw it up on the Jumbotron behind me, the Jesus Bible on the stage. But I'd like for you to kind of see your Bible, look at it. We'll get to Matthew 5 in just a moment. I wanted to do just a two-week series called Salt and Light. In our new space to kind of get our feet under us and remind us why we are here. And then we'll go into some Christmas stuff the last couple of weeks of December. And then launching a brand new series in January that I'm super excited about from Luke chapter 15, the story of the prodigal son. And we're going to look at it from the story of the father called the prodigal God. And so I want you to be here for the January series. Invite people to come with you. It's an awesome series, both for people that are far from God and not really into the church thing, to people that go to church week in and week out and really don't understand the story of the prodigal God. And so that's in January. We'll be doing some things to let people know about that. But this week and next week, we're going to be in Matthew chapter 5. As you know, today marks the beginning of a brand new season at City Church. And with a transition in seasons, a lot of things come. That it happens that way in life. It happens that way in the season of a church. A lot of emotions associated with different seasons, different times. Anytime there's change or adjustment, that comes with a lot of different stuff. And so as we go through this new season, enter this new season that we here at City Church as a family are entering, a lot of emotions come with that. A lot of ups and downs and back and forth and happy moments and sad moments and how are we going to do this and what about this and a lot of logistics, a lot of things come into play and all the emotions and the anticipation and the what ifs. That's the big one for me, like what if we get in there and this happens or that happens. A lot of things happen in different seasons. But what I wanted to do the next couple of weeks is just to remind us amidst the excitement, against the nervousness, against the anticipation, the challenges, the changes, the opportunities, the obstacles, all that craziness. Amidst all of that, it's important for us to stay laser focused on what doesn't change. And what doesn't change is our mission, our why God has placed us here. Now, if you have listened to me teach very much, you know I refer to these things a whole lot. We kind of gather our mission statement at City Church from Acts chapter 1, verse 1. It's in Acts chapter 1, verse 1, which is kind of part 2 for this guy named Luke that wrote the story of Jesus. The gospel bears his name, Luke. And he tells the story of Jesus all the way up to the resurrection of Jesus. And then he writes volume 2, what happened after Jesus left? Kind of post-Jesus. What happened to the earliest followers of Jesus? And in Acts chapter 1 and verse 1, Luke is writing this story to a particular guy. Most believe it was a Roman official, a guy named by the name of Theophilus. But what he says there is the mission of not just City Church, but all people who profess to be followers of Jesus. Luke says, in the very first book I wrote, referring to his gospel, O Theophilus, I have dealt, and here's the key statement, with all that Jesus began to do and teach. I told you the story of Jesus, Luke says, that's what Jesus started. But what you need to know is from this point forward, you are to continue what Jesus started. He began it, what he began to do and teach, and now we are called to continue it. And so that's like our simple statement at City Church. City Church exists to continue what Jesus began. What Jesus got started, we are called to continue, particularly what he began to do and what he began to teach. And so the way we say that here at City Church is we are to proclaim the gospel and we are to demonstrate the gospel. We announce it, what Jesus began to teach. Jesus taught the gospel, so we continue what he started. We proclaim the gospel. Jesus also, what he began to do, Jesus did certain things. Jesus lived a certain way. Jesus, by his life, demonstrated the gospel. And so that's our motto here at City Church. We continue what he began. We announce what Jesus had to do. We proclaim the gospel, and we demonstrate it. We live it out. Now, you've heard me say often, and this is a kind of an encouragement point when you're a portable church, the church is not a building. We know that. God has given us an awesome building. We will use this building as a platform to proclaim Jesus loudly, to announce the good news loudly, to live out the gospel in our community. But you are the church. The church is people. We know that all the way back from the little nursery rhyme songs, right? You hold your fingers in some magical way, you open the door, and there's the people. That's the church, right? We are the church. The church is people. The church is not a building. This building has a huge history. 100-plus years old, men, women, boys, and girls have gathered here to announce who Jesus is, to proclaim Jesus. And now we step into the stream of history to be a people who continue what Jesus started. We believe that this building provides us a better platform to continue his mission, to continue his mission in what we call our ministry. And our ministry is driven, if you're new to City Church, one, I didn't even do this because we were so excited, but there should be some little card in the seat in front of you. Wow. The seat in front of you should have a card. If you're a guest here at City Church, or this is the first time with us, or you're new to us, if you take just a moment to fill that out, we're going to have some offering things in both doors when we leave. You can drop them in there. But our four values that we talk a lot here at City Church, if you're new to us, our very first and most important value is very simple. The church belongs to Jesus. It's his church. It's not our church. Jesus said in Matthew 16:18, I will build my church, Jesus said. It's his church. When people say, who's the chief honcho at City Church? Who's the lead pastor? Who's the senior pastor? What I usually want to say is, it's really Jesus. Jesus is the head of City Church. He's the pastor. He's the senior pastor of City Church. We have the opportunity to point people to him. But at the end of the day, it's his church. The church belongs to Jesus. We are his followers. The church does not belong to us. It is his church. And for that reason, we tend to focus less on the do's and don'ts and the be's and don't be's. And we tend to focus more on who Jesus is and who we are in Jesus. Because we believe as you find your identity in Jesus, that following Jesus in obedience becomes more natural to you. I can give you a long list of do's and don'ts, but if I can get you to fall in love with Jesus, we don't have to worry about the do's and don'ts, because it's a natural overflow of our obedience to him. And so we talk a lot about Jesus. We preach about him. We sing about him. We teach our kids about him. When you're in here, we're telling your kids the gospel. We are telling them about Jesus because we believe that Jesus is a big deal. Are you with me on that? We believe that Jesus changes lives. We believe that Jesus restores marriages. We believe that Jesus offers hope. We believe that Jesus provides restoration and provides healing to the broken and to the hurting. The gospel of Jesus Christ is the greatest message known to humanity. So we want everything that we do, everything that we teach as City Church, to be centered and focused on the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ. Church belongs to Jesus. Now we say that the church belongs to Jesus and Jesus transforms our life. We call that grace. It is his extension to us when we are undeserving of it. And if we truly get grace, then grace becomes a way of life. That's our second core value. Grace is a way of life for us. That when we understand grace, that when we get grace, we begin to live it out. That the gospel is a message of undeserved and radical grace. That means there's nothing I can do to earn it. Nothing I can do to deserve it. Grace is provided by God through Jesus Christ to broken people. Now, I qualify as broken, just like you, sinful people. Our world is broken, we are broken, and the gospel steps into that. The gospel announces Jesus redeems and restores the broken. Now, City Church has a philosophy that we call the come as you are philosophy, that we are okay with the idea that we are not okay. We're okay with the idea that you're not okay, that you need Jesus. We realize that discovering and following Jesus is a journey, and we welcome people from every step on that journey. Authenticity is okay. It's allowed. It's encouraged. It's promoted because we know that life gets messy, and the grace is scandalous, that grace steps into that mess zone to bring redemption. And we believe that grace is a way of life for Jesus followers. That those who have received grace are to live lives that are dominated by grace. As Jesus taught, our highest calling is to love God and to love others. And grace compels us to live that Jesus-focused, other-centered life. That as we get grace, that we begin to live out grace. And so it's our prayer at City Church that you are people that began to understand the gospel, that you began to understand the radical nature of God's love and the radical nature of God's grace. And if you get that, that you'll begin to live that out in your everyday life. When you understand how much you've been forgiven, that you'll be quickly to learn how to forgive. That you, when you understand the amount of grace that's been poured upon us as undeserving sinners, that we begin to parent differently, that we begin to love our spouses differently. And by spouses, I mean like multiple spouses, not like one person, multiple spouses. That we begin to love the spouse in our life differently. I'd explain that in today's day and age. Love all your spouses. Don't get me distracted. I can see you guys now. You get me distracted. And it affects the way I live as a student, as a worker, as an employee, that grace affects my everyday life. And that we believe, then, our third core value, that if we're going to get grace, if we're going to lift up Jesus, that Jesus has called us to do this thing that we call life intentionally in community. That we as a community of followers, that we live intentionally in community together. At City Church, we believe life is best lived in community with other people. That Jesus instructs us to do life together. For that reason, every story matters at City Church. Every story matters. And growth happens when our stories collide. I love that. That growth happens in our lives when our stories are intertwined. When God's story intervenes in my story, then when my story intervenes in your story, when our stories intersect with the stories of other people, then life happens and growth happens. Isn't it amazing that the gospel creates a community of all types of people from all walks of life who share in this common belief that Jesus is who he claimed to be and that Jesus offers grace and forgiveness to broken people? And so we believe in creating safe environments where questions are encouraged and doubts are allowed and growth happens within those environments. We don't pretend to have it all figured out. Like, you don't have to talk to us very long to realize, like, we don't pretend that we've got it all together and we have it all figured out, that there is unity within our diversity, that we are different people from different walks, and that unity within diversity is a beautiful component of the community of faith, that we celebrate diversity and promote unity under the umbrella that we all belong to Jesus. Our fourth core value that I'll remind us of is so important in this strategic time in our church. Our fourth value is that we are for our city. We are in our city and for our city is how we phrase it. That our name reflects our belief about our city. That we are City Church. We are a group of followers who live in our city and are for our city. That we value the communities in which we live and we want to seek to love and serve the people around us. And that just doesn't mean Decatur. That means our cities of Decatur and Hartsville and Athens and Priceville and Huntsville. And as we grow even more cities, that we want to be in our communities, in our cities, and be in favor of our city. So what we do is we partner with other organizations in our city to promote the well-being, to promote the restoration of our city. And because we're a gospel-focused group, a gospel-centered group, we want to proclaim the gospel to our city because we believe the good news of Jesus brings healing, redemption, wholeness. We also want to demonstrate the gospel in the streets of our city. We want to live out grace, live out the grace that we have received. And so we advance the gospel beyond our city to other places so that the message of Jesus might be proclaimed and demonstrated in our city, for our city. City Church exists to continue what Jesus began. Gospel proclamation and gospel demonstration. Now, Jesus gave us these instructions in several passages. We're going to look at a short one today in Matthew chapter 5. Where Jesus compares his followers to salt and to light. So Matthew chapter 5. I'm going to turn my mic off for 1 second because I have to blow my nose. That's just awkward in the mic. Matthew 13. You'd rather me blow it out than spit it out, I can tell you. Matthew 5:13. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. And we'll look at these verses next week. We'll go ahead and read them today. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. What is Jesus talking about? He uses this metaphor of salt and light. Verse 13, again, we're looking at today. You are the salt of the earth. If the salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. This is a metaphor. You have to maybe flash back to your school days to remember sitting in English class where you heard the difference between a metaphor and a simile. Some of you have not remembered that since you were in school. I had to look it up. A metaphor says you are something. A simile says you are like or as something. Coming back to you now. A lot of you are like me. You're in the 80s. You don't remember anything from the 80s. The metaphor, you are the salt of the earth. Jesus doesn't say you're becoming like salt. One day you're going to be salt. Jesus said, if you follow me, you are salt. You're not striving to be salt. You are salt. Let me tell you about salt in the first century. Salt in the first century was a valuable commodity. Soldiers, Roman soldiers, were often paid in pounds of salt. You ever heard the expression, you are worth your salt? Where that came from was first century Roman soldiers would be paid in salt. And so if they didn't do their job, they withheld pay. If they did above their job, they'd be given extra salt. They were worth their salt. Now there is an implied idea, an implied value in this very concept. You bring value to the world. You are salt. There's an implied value in that. They were paid in salt. There's an implied understanding you're bringing value to the world. Now, what is this value that's brought as followers of Jesus? A lot of different ideas. You can count a million different ways that this verse is applied. There's a couple of key concepts in my mind. One, salt brings flavor. It's kind of a seasoning agent. Salt improves what is bland. How many of you, before you've even tasted your food, grab the salt shaker and sprinkle salt? Some of you, this is the only workout you get all week. Shaking salt on your food. Okay, confession time. I can see you. How many of you do that before you've even tasted your food? You're trying to improve the taste of what's bland. My wife is such an incredible cook, I hardly ever have to improve the taste of what is bland. See what I did there? Now, I have to admit, my wife got into this little bit of a habit recently that she would oversalt our food. You don't want that to happen. Like, you can't take salt off. Like, once there's salt, there's too much salt. One time recently, she put too much salt, and we were having this conversation, and Zach was referring to salt, and he said, this tastes salty. He said, what's the word for it? Like, salty? He's like, yeah, but what do you call it when it's too salty? Salty. Like, that is the word. Like, there's not another word. That's the word. Salty. You are the salt of the earth. It improves the flavor. This metaphor is driven from the Beatitudes, which are right in front of these words. Look what Jesus says in the first few verses of this chapter. Seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountain. When he sat down, his disciples came to him. And then what we have in Matthew 5 through 7 is the longest recorded sermon of Jesus. Jesus opened his mouth and taught them, saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, they are called the sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. for so persecuted the prophets who were before you. And then he goes right into, you're the salt of the earth. Right after he gives us the Beatitudes, where followers of Jesus are marked by humility and meekness and comfort and mercy and a hunger for thirst and righteousness and purity and peace and how we respond when we are reviled against and on and on and on. I like to call it upside down living. Right when Jesus says, this is how my followers look. This is the way they react. This is the way they respond. And in the midst of that, he says, you are salt of the earth. It's basically salty living. Salty living. Now, salty in modern vernacular, at least for younger people, means coarse or tough or aggressive. They're being salty. Like, has any of your teenagers use that expression? They use it around my house. They're being salty, had a salty attitude. It's a negative thing. Here, it's the opposite. Jesus is saying, you are the salt of the earth. Salty living, from a spiritual perspective, Matthew 5:13, salty living, not like getting angry at your parents or behaving aggressively toward one in modern vernacular, but salty living, from a Matthew 5:13 perspective, points people to Jesus. Key point here, it doesn't point them to the salt. It points them to Jesus. How many of you blaspheme tomatoes by putting salt on them? Anyone? Oh, man, don't even put your hand up. That's embarrassing. How many of you salt watermelon? Really? Wow. But when you do that, when you salt your tomatoes and salt your watermelon, you don't taste that and then think, man, that salt is amazing. What do you think? You think the tomatoes' flavors increase. I don't know how, but you think the flavor of the tomato is increased. Hopefully none of our true tomato growers raised their hand when I said that about salting your tomatoes. I love a good tomato sandwich. If I put a little salt on it, I don't think how amazing the salt is. Or watermelon, I don't think how amazing the salt is. I think how amazing the fruit is or the watermelon is. Same thing. As being salt in the earth, it points people to Jesus. It is a flavor. The way we live everyday life should add, here it is, Jesus flavor to our circle of influence. Am I flavoring those in my circle with Jesus? How I respond, how I react, things I say. Am I flavoring my sphere of influence with Jesus? You know what we need at City Church? Salty parents. Salty friends. Salty employees. Salty spouses. Salty neighbors. We need people that will add Jesus' flavor to the people around them. The psalmist says this, taste and see that the Lord is good. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Jesus' flavor. This idea of salt also implies the idea of preservation. It was a preserving agent. In that day and age, there was no refrigeration processes, and so it was necessary to preserve and protect things like meat through salt. What that implies is that the salt was different. It was distinct from what it was preserving. You don't put salt on salt. You don't say, man, my salt tastes a little bland. Give me some salt to salt my salt. It's a lot of uses of the word salt in one sentence. You don't salt your salt. You put salt on stuff. Salt is distinct from what you're making, you know, what you're bringing flavor to. We like a little salt and pepper on our steak before we put it on. You know why? Because that preserves the goodness of steak. Is there any food on the planet that God's allowed us to indulge in that's better than steak? Are you kidding me? I could eat it every night of my life. Preserving the flavor through some good salt. Preservation. A distinction that preserves the value of what it's preserving. We are in our city. We're in it. We're in it. We don't withdraw from it. We're in our city. It is necessary to be in the city to add value. We call it here, restore shalom. Shalom is an Old Testament word that means peace. It means wholeness. It means completion. We believe that God has called us to be in our city and for our city to help restore value to our city, to help restore wholeness to the city. You know what that means? That means we serve people in our city that will never step foot in our doors. You know why? Because we're adding value to the community in which God has placed us. Now, we believe and hope ultimately that we'll point all people to Jesus, whether that's a city church or not. But we believe that God's placed us strategically to be salt in our community, to add value to the community in which we live, to seek the restoration of our community, because sin damages stuff, and it hurts stuff, and it leaves brokenness. And who else is going to bring value than the followers of Jesus, who are the salt of the earth in the city? We are distinct but not removed. And then the last one I'll mention is the idea of redemption. That salt is a healing agent. Sometimes people put salt on wounds. Have you ever had a wound and then maybe went swimming in the ocean? And you thought, man, that stings, that hurts. Ever had a jellyfish wound or something like that while you're out of the ocean? Then you get in the water and sting. What happens? It stings. But it's in that stinging that healing is brought. That redemption is brought. It's necessary for redemption. It stings, but it heals. I don't know if you know this or not, but we preach a gospel. We proclaim a message that presupposes bad news. It assumes you're not good enough. You're a sinner. It's why we need Jesus. The gospel says, turn from you and turn to Jesus. Turn from me and turn to Jesus. It presupposes the bad news to announce the good news. That's what makes the good news so good. Is because the bad news is so terrible that outside of Jesus, there is no hope. That's why we preach the good news that implies the bad news. So the gospel has this kind of salt-like impact on its hearers. Now, we live in a day and age where it's very easy for people that are proclaiming Jesus to try to replace the salt of the gospel with something sugary. Like, we're not preaching a message filled with honey. Now, there's obviously some glorious news that we have to announce, but the glorious news comes on the heels of the really bad news, that outside of Jesus, we are bound to a Christless eternity. The salt says there's really good news that presupposes really bad news. You know what we don't do? We don't want to water down the gospel truth, do we? Now, you guys know me well enough. I open up the Bible and preach it. Like, people ask me my philosophy of preaching. It's like, I opened it up and preach it, right? We preach the Bible. We're a Bible-preaching church at City Church. You hear me say that all the time. If I ever disagree with the book, you go with what? The book, right? We're going to open up the Bible and we're going to preach it because we're going to point people to Jesus through the truth of God's Word. Now, there is a way to do that. There's a way to do that that offers redemption and healing and hope and forgiveness. You see, the goal of truth, the truth that often stings, but the goal of truth is always therapeutic. It's not damaging, it's healing. Look how Paul phrases this in Colossians chapter 4. This is an interesting passage. Look how Paul phrases this, Colossians chapter 4, verse 5. He's talking to Jesus followers. Conduct yourself wisely toward outsiders, toward people who are outside of the faith. So conduct yourself wisely. There's a wise way to conduct yourself. And then look how he describes this. Make the best use of your time. That's a whole other message. But then look at this, verse 6. Let your speech always be what? Gracious. Not harsh. Let your speech be gracious. Then here's our phrase. Seasoned with salt. Jesus flavor. How I interact with people should be filled with grace. It should be gracious. It should be seasoned with Jesus flavor. Look at this. So that you may know how you ought to answer each person. Man, I'm a guy that thinks he has answers. Like, I'll get into a discussion quickly about stuff and defend my position quickly. It just happened at my house last night. We won't get into details. I'm quick to defend. I'm quick to use logic. I'm quick to use this is why this makes sense and why your argument doesn't make sense. Like, I'm that guy that's quick to do those things. And Paul says to the Colossian Christians, you want to know how to win the argument? Let your speech be filled with grace. Let it be seasoned with salt. Jesus flavor. It's not about always who's right, who's wrong. Here's my logic that out-logics yours. It's about, am I living a life that's seasoned with salt? Am I bringing Jesus flavor? Am I responding to other people graciously in life? Gospel has a salt-like impact. We don't change the truth, we bring the truth with graciousness seasoned with salt. You know why? Grace is a way of life. The truth of the gospel changed my life. I've been overwhelmed by His grace. And so how would I not bring the truth without grace, right? That's how I received it. Flavor, preservation, redemption. All of these components and the others that are key to this passage, they're foundational to who we are as followers of Jesus. We are distinct. We proclaim Jesus as Savior and Lord. And as His followers, we add and we persevere and we bring value to the people around us with the truth of the gospel. We point people to Jesus. Now, there's something innate about salt. If you eat a lot of salt, what's the result of that? You get what? You guys can respond to me now. If I eat a lot of salt, what am I going to do? I'm going to get thirsty, right? Parched and thirsty. Are we living life in a way that makes people thirsty for Jesus? Like the flavor that we're bringing? When we are living out a salty life in front of others, are we creating a thirst for Jesus? Now, we can't move past this passage, and I'm going to mention this and we'll be done. We can't move past this passage without looking at the obvious thing that Jesus says here. Salt of the earth, if it loses its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. Jesus gives us a built-in warning label. Now, when you think about it, it seems a little silly. How does salt lose saltiness? Like, salt is salt. Like, how can it not be salty? It's not one of those, it almost seems like those unnecessary warning labels that you see on stuff. Like, I saw a bag of peanuts, and the warning label on it said, ready for it? Do not eat if you're allergic to peanuts. Well, thank you. With my deathly peanut allergy, I was on the verge of ripping open this bag and consuming all these peanuts. But now that I see the warning label, literally, I saw a warning label and an iron that said, do not use this while wearing the shirt. Every man in here has had that thought, I guarantee you. I can do it if I hold my shirt out. How about the one on the stroller? Do not fold up stroller while child is in the stroller. Like, you know they put that on there because that has happened. And then, believe it or not, this is a warning label, an actual warning label on a thermometer. And this is so relevant. And you'll understand why in a moment when I tell you. A warning label on a thermometer that says, do not use orally if you have used rectally. Now, you can laugh at that, but I'm going to tell you, your worship leader, Ross Lewis, who was sick recently, didn't read the warning label. That's all I'm going to say about that. Did you hear the warning? Maybe we need to revisit the warning. I don't think you got the joke. Do not use orally if you have used rectally. You guys know what that means? Your worship leader didn't read the warning label. He hasn't received a kiss from Susan in 3 to 4 weeks, from what I understand. By the way, he did run 26.2 miles yesterday in a marathon in Memphis. So, salt losing its saltiness. What is Jesus talking about? He's talking about influence. The Dead Sea salt in the first century would wash up on the shores, and then the saltiness would literally wash away, leaving a residue that would kill whatever it touched when it came to plant life. The only thing they knew to do with this residue that lined the streets of first century cities was to take it and use it for pavement, early first century pavement. It would harden and people could walk upon it. That's the illustration that Jesus uses. What Jesus is saying is, stay salty, my friend. Stay salty. Don't lose your influence. What does it imply? Don't lose the truth of the gospel. Don't lose your influence by removing yourself from culture, or failing to recognize the value of the people around you that may or may not even know Jesus. Don't lose your influence. Don't lose the opportunity to be Jesus and demonstrate you, Jesus. Don't lose your distinction. Now, that doesn't mean like someone looks at me and thinks, man, that guy dresses weird. He must be a Christian. That means my distinction is amidst all the blur and the noise of our culture, we don't lose the truth of the gospel, that we live Jesus and we proclaim Jesus and we live seasoned with salt. Don't let your message get lost in the methods. Don't get the wrong focus. Don't get the wrong emphasis. It's why we preach Jesus time and time and time again. If you come to City Church, you're going to hear us talk about and preach about Jesus because we don't want to lose our distinction. I don't want you to get any idea this is about what kind of show we can put on or what your pastor can say or how good of a leader I am. I don't want you to get any idea that City Church is about the systems and it's about the right plans in place. Now, we want to do all those things effectively and professionally, but at the end of the day, we're going to preach Jesus because I can't change your life, but Jesus can. I can't heal your marriage, but Jesus can. I can't bring you hope, but Jesus can. So we're going to preach him. We're not going to lose the distinction of who Jesus is. We exist to continue what he began. This word, lose your taste, it can also be translated foolish. There's a danger of looking foolish because we fail to be who we are, salt. And instead, we become contaminated, useless. Man, what a sad commentary on followers of Jesus. You've lost your saltiness. You know what the opposite of foolish is? Genuine, authentic. Be salt. Be salty. Some of Paul's saddest words in the New Testament, a couple different places, Paul says, hey, he's talking to a group of people that he helped mentor. And in the midst of this conversation of, hey, encouraging people and bring this person, he makes this statement. He says, by the way, I have been forsaken by Demas. Demas was a follower of Jesus that forsook the ministry of Paul. And he says, I've been forsaken by Demas, who basically loved the culture, the world around him, and walked away from Jesus. And what's sad commentary that he exchanged his influence for the pursuit of the foolish. In another place, Paul says, look, I'm going to encourage you to guard your heart, and I'm going to guard my own heart unless I myself become unqualified or disqualified from what God's called me to do. Stay salty. Jesus says, continue what I began. You are the salt. We are the salt of the earth. It's not our job to create salt. It's not our job to generate salt. It's our role to be who we are, followers of Jesus, people marked by the good news of the gospel, living lives that are seasoned by grace, living out, demonstrating the gospel. And that happens inside our walls and outside our walls. I'm going to share this story with you, then we're going to end. This Thanksgiving at my parents' home who are here today, we had some special guests. My nephew, my older brother Dale, who's been gracious enough to come and volunteer to serve in our kids' ministry today, which, by the way, is one of the top children's pastors in all of the country. He's constantly recognized as in the top 10 most influential children's pastors in America. So your kids are in good hands today. And we didn't even have to do a background check on him. How amazing is that? But my brother's youngest son, Caleb, is dating a girl who's from Cambodia. And so she came along with her parents, who are from Cambodia, and came and displaced some of our awesome, good southern food with some Cambodian food. Don't ask my mom about it or she'll get salty. But here's what I want to tell you about them. Their story is they were literally rescued out of the killing fields of Cambodia, if you remember what happened after Vietnam War. And if you read the history of it, it's very telling history. We kind of, as Americans, we actually kind of neglected what was going on, and over 2 million people got killed in the process because of everything that happened at Vietnam. There's a lot of baggage and history with the story. But amidst all of these people getting slaughtered in concentration camps, obviously there was stories of hope and influence. And these parents of Natalie, who is my nephew's girlfriend, Natalie's parents were literally saved as children out of these concentration camps. And the mother was telling us this fascinating story about when they were there and being persecuted, and literally most of all their friends were killed as children. The mom, Natalie's mother, actually was, as a little girl, the last person to see her father alive. He was murdered. He was a government official, and they sent her in to get him to come out. Like, they were eating dinner, and they sent the daughter in. It's like, tell your dad to come out. And he came out and realized what was happening and kissed his little girl goodbye, and they took him up the road a quarter of a mile and killed him. So it's that type of life story that they're coming out of. But the mother was telling us this fascinating story about how they became refugees out of Cambodia, that there's this group of missionaries that came that were serving food. And hundreds of people there to get this food that were being persecuted, and a handful of missionaries with a little bit of food. And you've seen the scenes, or maybe been a part of them, where they're handing out all of this food, and all these people are just overwhelming and pressing, trying to get food. And this one missionary reaches through this crowd to, this would be Natalie's mother's mother, okay? So Natalie's grandmother reaches through the crowd to this one lady and extends his hand to her, and into her hand puts $100 bill. And then pulls back, and crowd goes on, food goes on. With that $100 bill, this now Natalie's grandmother took the $100 and was able, through that $100 bill, to get her entire family out of Cambodia into Thailand, and from Thailand, eventually refugees into the United States. I asked her, like, did that missionary even realize what happened? She said, no. Like, this missionary has no clue that he extended a $100 bill to a lady who, and again, they were all grew up Cambodian, they were all Buddhist and not followers of Jesus. This entire family reached the United States, met each other. Whole nother story that I may share next week as part of the sermon. This guy moves into the refugee camp, and eventually they all become followers of Jesus. This one guy who reached across and gave a $100 bill and doesn't even know it changed the life of not just a person, but a generation of people that are now sitting in, you know, northeast Mississippi having Thanksgiving meal with the Hudson family, and that all is traced back to one guy who was salt. We are the salt of the earth. And we have the opportunity to demonstrate and proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ day in and day out from this stage, but more importantly, in our schools, in our homes, in our job places. We have the privilege and the opportunity to live salty lives. We are the salt of the earth. City Church, be salty.